talk more about the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., I'm joined now by Ken Davis, historian and author of the Don't Know Much book series. He's also author of the new book, Strong Man, The Rise of Five Dictators and the Fall of Democracy. Ken, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to talk to us. There's certainly a line of thinking in this country that if we were to add one non-president to Mount Rushmore, that Martin Luther King Jr. might be the historical figure that would make the most sense. Taking a big picture look at his legacy, what is it that stands out to you?
Glad to be with you again, Ryan. It is an extraordinary idea. As a person who grew up during the era in which Dr. King was doing his work and remembering very well the day of his death in 1968, this is a piece of history that is very real in my history. So I'm interested to talk about it because Dr. King, you know, when we start talking about putting people on the sides of mountains or that large memorial that there is to Dr. King on the National Mall, people start to then get away from the humanity of the person. And Dr. King was an extraordinary human being. But I always preface any conversation about him on this day with the idea that he's far more beloved today in America in many respects than he was in his own time. And that's often what we do with those who have passed away. We tend to immortalize them and forget that in his own time he was considered an agitator, even called a communist by J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI. So very different picture of Martin Luther King during those years and today.
The lead up to his role as a civil rights movement leader, what was notable about that path to you?
Well, first of all, we should say he was born and raised in the South, in Atlanta. Although his parents had a somewhat comfortable life for a black man, young man in America at that time, but he had a really changing experience. He came north one summer to work in, and he was actually in a picking tobacco in Connecticut. Yes, they grow tobacco in Connecticut. And he was astonished by seeing the difference in how black people were treated in the North, even though there was certainly extensive racism in the North as well. But he could go to eat where he want. He saw black and white people going to the same church, completely opposite his experience. It was sharpened then when he went to college, and he began to learn about Gandhi, for instance, and his nonviolent tactics in gaining India's independence, and that was profoundly influential on him. But of course, it really is in the 1950s when he is preaching in Alabama, in Montgomery, Alabama, at the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, and of course, on December 1st, 1955, Rosa Parks, an African-American woman, refused to surrender her bus seat to a white passenger and was arrested. And that became the moment at which Martin Luther King, as the spokesperson for that bus boycott, gained a national audience for the first time. He was a powerful speaker. He had an enormous presence. He was well-spoken, and he was very good on television, and that was a big difference in those days. Of course, these are the early days of television. Just like John F. Kennedy was the first television president in some respects, Dr. King became known to Americans through the television. And of course, the success of the Montgomery bus boycott, which ended segregation on the public buses there, launched him onto his career of nonviolent resistance to the systemic racism that existed in America at the time.
The I Have a Dream speech, what is it that made that one in particular so special?
Well, you just have to listen to it, I think. And we've probably heard it maybe too many times or just heard bits of it without hearing the entirety of the eloquence, the passion, and the sense of justice, and that this was a moral sense of justice that he was bringing to this cause of civil rights. And of course, this was in 1963. He had already been fighting for a decade peacefully using the idea of sit-ins or boycotts of buses, as he did in Montgomery, to use nonviolent civil disobedience as the means to change America. And there's no question that he did. He influenced presidents, certainly John F. Kennedy. He influenced Lyndon B. Johnson and was closely aligned with Johnson's efforts on civil rights matters and voting rights matters. And these things were so, so important. So the speech, if you go back and listen to the whole thing, is really wonderful. I should also mention that many people don't realize that a young man named John Lewis also spoke that day. And of course, the late John Lewis passed away last year, an extraordinary fighter for civil rights, for economic justice, for racial justice in this country. And we mourn his loss as well still, the man who told us to get in good trouble, as he put it.
The legacy that continues today of Martin Luther King Jr. and the civil rights movement, what are some of the hallmarks of that?
You know, I want to point out one thing I think is important. We talk about the civil rights movement, but Dr. King had three pieces that he was talking about. And in fact, in his last public sermon, which was preached in Washington, D.C., just a few days before he was assassinated, he talked about certainly racial justice, but he also talked about economic justice. The deep poverty that existed across racial lines in this country, and the shame of that for America, a country of such wealth. I mean, you could make that same speech today, obviously, a situation completely worsened by the pandemic. But finally, he also talked about his resistance to the Vietnam War. And this is one of the reasons that he did become somewhat unpopular. He believed that we should not study war no more, and he said as much in that speech. And it was largely because of his resistance to the Vietnam War that kind of drew put a wedge in the civil rights movement of its day. Many of his colleagues thought that it was a distraction from the main work that had to be done. But Dr. King really, at the end of his life, was talking about these three essential ideas: the end of war, pacifism, nonviolent solutions to the world's problems, the end of poverty, and of course, the end of racial injustice in this country. It's an extraordinary legacy. The words ring down to us today. They are as true as ever. What he was able to accomplish, of course, with a great many other people alongside, and we forget that he was certainly the most visible face of the movement, but there were many others, men and women, who struggled alongside Dr. King to achieve that dream, which still has to be realized.
And then final question for you real quick. The federal holiday, first celebrated in 1986, how did that come about?
Well, it came about largely after the assassination, but I have to say it was also resisted for a long time. It was resisted at the federal level and even among states. And Ronald Reagan eventually signs the bill into law, somewhat reluctantly. We have to be honest about that. And even after it became a federal holiday, it was not a state holiday in all 50 states. That would take another few years. Not until 1991 did all 50 states finally recognize the Martin Luther King holiday. It had been a federal holiday, yes, but not a truly celebrated by all states until 1991. So that's not that long ago, of course. And it is an indication that the resistance to the ideas of racial justice in this country, that resistance is still very powerful.
Ken Davis, historian and author of the Don't Know Much book series, which you can find at don'tknowmuch.com. Ken, thanks so much for running down the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Ryan. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.